Should have brought a stool. Sorry if I look like just a head above a podium.
You're okay, you can, you need to pull the mic down, so it's.
Yes. One of my indulgences to being a little older is I quit wearing heels, but it doesn't help me in situations like this. Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Leslie Arrett, and I represent the city of Harahan in this matter. And this is a situation where the district court created a new Giglio liberty interest due process claim under Section 1983 against police departments and other law enforcement agencies. And that decision should be reversed for multiple reasons. Now, as you know, 1983 is not a don't do statute. It's a don't do it without due process statute. But what would the due process be in this circumstance? What would it look like? Because in this scheme, the due process that Mr. Adams wanted, Captain Adams wanted, was to have his civil service board appeal. But we know that the Civil Service Board under U.S. Supreme Court Brady, Giglio, Kyles, this long line of Supreme Court cases, the Civil Service Board's decision can't supplant what the prosecutor decides should be and shouldn't be on the Brady, Giglio.
Let me ask you about your complaint. You're seeking damages, correct?
I'm the defendant. I'm not.
About the complaint. Damages are being sought.
Yes, sir.
So there's no effort in this case to remove the impediment to his career, if that's what it really is, correct? There's no effort to seek injunctive declaratory relief.
No, sir.
That should disappear from his record.
That's exactly right, Your Honor. And in fact, in this case, as you know from the record, Captain Adams was given due process. He was given both a Laudermill predetermination, pre-deprivation hearing, and he was also given a post-deprivation hearing. He chose to settle that, and he chose to resign his employment from the city of Harahan. So, in fact, he chose his own fate in terms of a liberty interest. He could still be working for the city of Harahan right now, but he is not because he chose to settle.
Now, your brief seems to accept that there is a liberty interest to the employment. Does it?
Well, I think there's a liberty interest in employment, but in this case, we're not talking just about a liberty interest. We're talking about, because as I said, is there a liberty interest and is there due process? And
you need both, it seems to me.
And right, you would need.
I don't want to use a word you'll immediately reject, conceding. You are accepting that he has shown in this case a liberty interest in the continuation of his job as a policeman. And that, I'm not sure if I'm there yet.
Well, I'm not conceding it because he chose to give that up. I mean, he settled with the department and he resigned. So in fact, he had no adverse employment action at all. However, even if you get past that, you have to still show that you're entitled to some due process. And unfortunately for criminal defendants, Brady, Giglio, Kyles all say that, you know what, that discretion is in the prosecutor's hands, solely the prosecutor. The prosecutor knows what's relevant, what's not relevant. And just as a matter of fact, the Harahan Police Department did nothing but send a determination, an investigative report, to the prosecutor. Didn't say anything in a cover letter like, folks, you should put this guy on the Giglio list. Folks, you should do something bad with this guy. No. All it did is forward it. And in fact, you know what it forwarded with that? It forwarded the letter to Mr. Adams, Captain Adams, saying he had the right to appeal, which the prosecutor could easily find out he did. So that's not the issue. The police department did nothing but discharge what they are required under Brady and Giglio line of cases to do, and in fact, what the Jefferson Parish Police Department said, you must do immediately. You must not, think what should and couldn't happen and what due process might happen. You have to send it to us, because guess what? It's our decision, the prosecutor, to determine what to do with it from there. Now, the district court also based its ruling on some flawed legal conclusions. It accepted two factual allegations as true legal conclusions, and in fact, as we know under the Supreme Court Twombly case, courts aren't bound to accept as true legal conclusions couched as factual allegations. And one of the first of those that's really important is that the district court found that once someone gets on a Giglio list, they never get off. But there's no case law to support that. In fact, again, it's prosecutorial discretion. And in fact, I have a case that I will give you the cite for. It's Lane versus Marion County District Attorney's Office, 310 Oregon Appellate Court, 296. It's a 2021 case in which, in that case, there was a big hoo-ha. The claim was about the district attorney deciding whether or not to take someone off the list. So that's just a false legal conclusion that once someone gets on the list, they can't get off the list. The other premise that was accepted as true, in which Mr. Adams said repeatedly in his complaint, was that the Giglio decision was somehow in the hands of the police department. But in fact, that's absolutely not true. The police department doesn't make Giglio decisions, doesn't keep a Giglio list, doesn't publish a Giglio list, doesn't Giglio impair officers, doesn't decide who remains or goes off the list, and that's a matter of well-settled Supreme Court law under Brady and Giglio and Kyles. In the Kyles case, the court said the prosecutor is responsible to disclose what's known only to police, and that was what the Kyles case stood for, was that the prosecutor had to disclose what it might not know, but a police department would know. And that's why prosecutors then put the onus on police departments, turn over everything to us. Turn over everything, and we're going to decide. So under Kyles, the U.S. Supreme Court made clear it was the Harahan Police Department's obligation as a police department to provide potential Brady and Giglio information to the prosecutor as an integral part of the judicial phase of the Brady-Giglio decision-making process. Now, there's another very important case that we've cited in our briefing, Roe versus Lynch. It's a First Circuit Appellate Court, 2021. The court affirmed dismissal of a liberty interest due process claim, saying the plaintiff cannot have a protected interest in something that government officials can grant or deny in their discretion, and discouraging broad discretion is contrary to the U.S. Supreme Court's recognition that a prudent prosecutor should err in favor of disclosure of Brady or Giglio information. And so,
case you're citing, is it in your brief?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Is it in your brief?
Yes, sir. It's Roe versus Lynch, 997 Federal 3rd, 80, 2021, First Circuit case. But I love this line from the Lane case that I just said to you, which is Brady is the constitutional floor, not the ethical ceiling. And so what the dictate is we need to have anything that might have some sort of Brady-Giglio impact because it has a larger impact on a criminal defendant or the ability to maintain a conviction in a criminal case. And so we have a much larger responsibility here. And we don't know everything you know, so you've got to turn over information so we can make this determination.
Well, let me ask you this. I know
yes, sir.
In your briefing, of course, your lead out position about the district court's recognition of the liberty interest, that's there. Beyond that, what do you understand, given the retirement or settlement of Ms. Adams, what relief do you understand he's asking other than this recognition of this constitutional right? I mean, given the settlement.
Damages, Your Honor.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah. Because he's already settled, and that's a great question. I mean, he's already settled the matter, and he wants something else because he, in fact.
Damages from whom? From the city?
I'm sorry?
Damages from the city?
Yes, sir.
And given your argument that it's not the city who actually has the list, is the DA a missing ingredient here?
Yes, sir. There's a link. There's a missing link in that causation chain because, as I said, the police department did what it was told it had to do. It turned over information with no commentary whatsoever. The prosecutor then decides what to do with it from there. And guess what, by the way? We don't know. There's no allegation at all in this complaint that either the Harahan Police Department or the prosecutor did anything with it. There's just an assumption here. Once you get on the Brady list, Giglio list, you never get off, and it hurts your right. But there's nothing in the complaint that says it leapt off the page and went anywhere. And there's no allegation that it did cause that damage. So I think that's an important aspect as well. Now, another issue is that a deprivation of liberty interest claim requires the deprivation and the resulting harm to derive from the same source. And that's also in the Roe v. Lynch case. So it's in under Fifth Circuit law, it's the Fifth Circuit uses the stigma plus analysis to determine it applies the stigma plus test when a plaintiff brings a liberty interest claim alleging reputational harm by the government. And the district court mysteriously dismissed the stigma plus claim, which the Fifth Circuit says is the exact same analysis, but didn't dismiss this claim. But it has to be dismissed because under the stigma plus line of cases, you have to have the same actor cause the stigma as cause the plus. I mean, it can't be two separate governmental actors. And so that's under the Roe v. Lynch case. There's also the Espinoza versus Whitaker case. It's a Ninth Circuit case. It's in our briefing, Your Honors. Ninth Circuit 2019 case. In that case, the prosecutor is the one who released this information about the officer and sent it to the employer, who was the Department of Homeland Security. And the court found no stigma plus. There was no claim there because even though both were governmental entities, they were not done by the same entity. The stigma is the public disclosure by the prosecutor of the Giglio impairment, and the plus was the employer, the Department of Homeland Security, firing this officer, and the court said there's no claim there because it's not perpetrated by the same governmental actor. So Adams says the issue presented is whether a police department is given license by Brady and Giglio to publish unsubstantiated allegations to a district attorney, thereby destroying a civil service employee's liberty interest. Well, the first problem there is there's no publication. Second of all, the police department doesn't publish anything, and there's no allegation that it did. The only allegation is that there was a transmittal email and documents from the police department to the prosecutor. And by the way, the case law, in fact, in this particular case, Captain Adams did a public records information request to the department, to the prosecutor asking for their Brady and Giglio list, And the prosecutor said, we're not giving it to you because it's work product. So where's the publication there? It's difficult to see. As we've noted, and Judge Stewart mentioned, there's a link in the causation chain here because there's nothing that the Harahan Police Department did that it shouldn't have done, that it wasn't required by law to do. Finally, you know, this cause of action that was created by the district court is completely unrecognized. There's absolutely no court, none were cited in the United States in which a so-called pre-Giglio due process requirement would be required. And I see I'm out of time. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. You have your rebuttal. All right, hear from Mr. Adams.
Okay, thank you.
I have a question for Deputy Clerk. Is this the courtroom the afternoon sitting is in? I see some new guests, I was wondering. All right.
Hey, good morning, Your Honors. My name is Brandon Venegas. May it please the court, I represent Captain Adams. And let me just kind of correct some things. Justice, the complaints allege and show that the police chief of the city of Harahan initiated a plan and policy to circumvent the civil service post-deprivation due process hearing and findings of the Civil Service Board by communicating his unadjudicated findings on investigations that he himself created. In other words, he was creating the discipline. And you know, my colleague had mentioned settled. Well, we didn't settle. We didn't settle the particular case where the Giglio was sent. Okay, there were two more investigations. So let me just kind of correct that. And ultimately, he said, you know what? I'm done with this. I'm done with Harahan. But I'm not done with being a police officer. And ultimately, we alleged and we showed in both complaints that circumventing and neutering the due process provided by the civil service to any results of that independent tribunal's decision and findings was the purpose of the rush to declare my client untruthful to the district attorney's office with allegations created by the police chief. And look, I'm telling you, they had conversations. If you look at the complaint on pages 23 onwards, the chief of police and his subordinate knew that once an allegation of truthfulness was communicated to the district attorney, that it couldn't be removed. The police chief was in such a rush to end careers that he mistook the louder. I suspect that they mistook the initial check Loudermill hearing as if this was a real hearing. And I believe that he mistook the Loudermill created pre-disciplinary hearing as the, before. That a Loudermill, the way it's structured, because it's employment, you don't want to have somebody that might be a bad employee hanging about. So what Loudermill does is it creates a initial check. And that initial check is for people that are in good faith. If, for instance, in the Cleveland v. Board of Loudermill, the person that was disciplined, they had his name wrong and they fired him without giving him a hearing. But the Loudermill hearing rests on the fact that there's a post-deprivation hearing. The Loudermill decision states, our holding rests in part on the provisions in Ohio law for a full post-termination hearing. It further says, we conclude that all process that is due is provided by a pre-termination opportunity to respond, coupled with the post-termination administrative procedures as provided by the Ohio statute. You know, as I mentioned, we showed in the complaints that the police chief knew the consequences of his communications, of his unadjudicated and predetermined findings would be the client, would be permanently on the Giglio list. And what they're seeking is a rule that you can do whatever you want if you're a police, and as long as you say it's Giglio communication, then that's going to be okay. They're seeking to give themselves essentially the prosecutorial absolute immunity. And that's not the case here. You can't communicate allegations that you were a part of, that you designed in order to put somebody on a Giglio list. And if you look at the complaint, one of the things that they did is in January of that year, if you look at the complaint, let me cite it here. We show in the complaint, to add insult to injury, the complaint shows that Chief Walker actually opened an investigation of plaintiff for being on the Giglio list with a view of terminating, and that was in the record pages 30 and 31, and it was attached as Exhibit 9, which is Record of Appeal 114 and 115. So basically, while he was waiting for to have his post-termination civil service hearing, they investigated him for being on the Giglio list. Do you want to know why he was on the Giglio list? Because Chief Walker, and they had a policy to put him on the Giglio list. What we're trying to prevent is having, you know.
Assuming your arguments about how things transpired and why are there, I mean, what's the case law to support the determination by the district court below with respect to the constitutional right?
Well, the fact, what we did with, for the appellate brief is we restated Loudermill to explain the process in the employment context. But the case that we cited was Baumgartner. And what happened in Baumgartner is the person that may had a, he had an appeal right and he wasn't able to get the remedy. And, you know, much was made in the brief about the remedy. We won. They violated the police officer's Bill of Rights. And that remedy is that any adverse action, and that's read broadly, is null and void. Well, the adverse action that was sent by Chief Walker, all he had to do was wait. He decided to send his unadjudicated findings to the district attorney for purposes of removing people later for having Giglio violations.
I mean, there are several assumptions here, and there may well be evidence about the ill will of the police chief, but among the assumptions is that once your client's name is on that list, it can't be removed. What is that other than an assumption? What do we know about that?
We know because at the civil service hearing, in the brief we cited on pages, in my, I think it's on in the complaint page, Record of Appeal 25 and 29, he had a pattern in practice. Captain Adams wasn't the first person that he did this to. He did it to three other officers. And Officer Darwin, he had disciplined him, and he also sent the Giglio list. And on September 26, 2019, the civil service meeting, the agenda that was attached to that civil service meeting was trying to get him off the Giglio list. Later, after they sent the communication to the district attorney in October, I think it was October 19th, 2019, and November 13th, 2019, there was another civil service meeting. And he admitted that he couldn't remove him from the Giglio, the DA would not remove him from the Giglio list. The civil service board.
There'll be a right to have your name removed, I don't know one way or another. Yeah. All you know now is it seems to me the Civil Service Commission or the police, the district attorney is not willing to remove, but I wonder if that is actually what the law is, and you haven't tested it, it seems to me.
Well, I mean, look at it from their point of view. They have duties on the Brady, okay? And look, I want to answer your question, but...
what I'm talking about is what the law is. You may give me some sort of prudential reasons, but if there really isn't any law on it, I'm not terribly concerned about looking at it from their viewpoint.
Well, I think from a risk-averse situation, they don't want to go ahead and... There's no law, as far as I can tell, but from a risk-averse, they don't have a duty to my client. They collect the information, they put them on the list. I spoke with the person, I mean, it's not in the record, but I did speak with the district attorney. But at the same time, it does seem kind of wrong to me that this particular chief of police had a plan in practice, had done it to three other officers prior in order to have discipline, in order to send communications. Every single one of those communications, I believe, I have to check that, but at least one of the ones I know, declared that these people were untruthful. And the purpose of doing that...
You're making a passionate argument, which is understandable, on behalf of your client, but you're not helping us in terms of, you know, what the legal basis for all this is. We're not going to unpack whether what you say... We're not going to unpack whether what you say is true or not in terms of why people did and so on and so forth. And that's pretty much what you're giving us. Now, you say in the brief, my client, quote, won, which meant on first reading a vindication of all this you said. But as I understand it, correct me if I'm wrong, the civil service never made a determination about any of that because that's when the settlement occurred and all of that ended. Is that correct or not?
No, that's not correct. Right. What happened was is we had multiple day hearings.
Did the civil service make a determination vis-a-vis the allegations that you're claiming?
They made a determination that they had violated his police officer's Bill of Rights, the minimum standards, And as such, the determination in the decision of the Civil Service Board was null and void. In terms of settling things, that had to do, there were two other investigations of my client. And at that point, once we had shown what was going on within, you know, he accepted the first decision, which was the discipline that they had communicated the Giglio information to the district attorney.
The motion from captain or sergeant, are you saying that was overturned by the Civil Service?
Yes, it was, yes.
All right.
Yep. So the.
But I guess what concerns me, and this is a unorthodox, there are a lot of new laws made, all the new decisions all the time. The Fifth Circuit may be getting known for that. It seems to me the real action here would be to test this assumption that your client's name cannot be taken off the list by suing the district attorney. And he said it can't be done.
Well,
and off you go and say, you haven't been vindicated necessarily, but if whatever the underlying allegations are that got your client on that list are shown not to be true, then they will be a right to have that dishonor removed from your client's record. And this is not the case to determine that, and that seems to be the injury.
Well, the cause that put us on the list is what we would allege is the defamatory statement. The allegations were essentially, as the Civil Service Board ruled, null and void. So to me, sending out, they took their chances when they sent it out.
Is it defamatory? It wasn't publicized.
Well, it was publicized.
Publicity of it, which is perfectly understandable, but the publicity of it, I guess, arose from this litigation, not from the action of the police chief sending this to the DA.
Well, the purpose was to publish to the DA in order to put us on the Giglio list, essentially.
For the DA to know it, but not to publicize it. So I'm not sure I'm just wondering about you calling it.
Well, look, we don't want to work at Harahan anymore, but it doesn't mean we don't want to be a police officer. Whenever you fill out an application, you have to tell people that you're on the Giglio list.
And that's why getting your client's name off the list seems to be the necessary goal, not this litigation.
Well,
yeah, I mean, work with them.
I'm
thinking poorly out loud, so help me with this.
No, I understand, but at the same time, they have the problem of absolute immunity. And so decisions that the DA decides to make is not subject to litigation.
Prosecutorial immunity from damages, maybe, but not from correcting some record if it needs to be corrected.
Well, if they put us on the Giglio list, they communicated what ultimately ended up being an untrue statement, then why should it be our burden? Maybe the city of Harahan should interplead the district attorney in order to mitigate that damage. But at the same time, you know, the harm that was caused was caused by the city of Harahan. And, you know, and these communications are not blanketly protected. There is a divide between, in the judicial phase, decisions by the district attorney to not call witnesses. But there's cases that we cited, Crowell v. Lawyer, they cited a case with Roe v. Lynch. One of the most important things that I thought about Roe v. Lynch was Justice Lippis said that his concern in this particular case was that there were no allegations about the employer. He said if there had been allegations against the employer for trying to communicate to the district attorney's office to put him on the Giglio list, then the result of that case finding absolute immunity or prosecutorial immunity could well very well be reversed. I would have a look at the concurrence in that particular case. Because that's the concern, is that you're going to have this, you know, we have a civil service system, and that civil service system is meant to protect against favoritism and so forth. If you can go ahead and send discipline out.
You're making policy arguments, though, counsel. I mean, that's not our job. It's not that they aren't significant and that we're not paying attention to them, but you're using this as a forum to convince us of the correctness of your position, and we don't take a position on that, just trying to keep you centered in on,
well,
you know, the law. I mean, where things stand legally here. The DA has the list, and they're not part of this lawsuit. Whatever you may say, is to Judge Southwick's point. So how does the city of Harahan, who doesn't have the list, whatever you say about them being the catalyst for it being there, it's the DA that maintains the list, correct?
It is the DA that maintains the list, but the information, we made allegations that the investigations were concocted in order to put us on the list. So we won our civil service hearing, we won the post-deprivation hearing, yet we're still on the list. How's that fair when the civil service gives us the, how the civil service and the Louisiana law provides under the Police Officer's Bill of Rights 40-25-31 that any action in violation which the Civil Service Board found is an absolute nullity. Well, it's not an absolute.
Doesn't that bring you back to the question Judge Southwick asked, that if you sue the DA, you can't get damages, but if your client is improperly on the list, wouldn't that be the entity to be sued to get it off the list, since that's the person who has it there, with the ammunition that you're speaking of about vindication by the civil service?
But the DA didn't. The DA didn't improperly put us on the list. He just received the information.
But the DA maintains the list.
He may maintain the list, but
it's the DA who gives up the giglio in any case. All the prosecutors in the state, I mean, they have the list. And in a case, they provide that to defense counsel as a matter of course. I mean, that's routine. But if they have the list.
But there's no procedure to get off the list. And what you're saying is that we, instead of focused on the policy, where
let's put it this way, a question I ask a lot. Tell me succinctly, what is it the relief you're in this court seeking? What is the relief you're seeking from this court?
So what I would ask the court to do is either affirm, but if the court decides to remand the case and then with some instructions as to what do we have to prove, because it's clear from the case law, Stockdale v. Helper, Beck v. Phillips, and Crowell v. Lawyer, that communications.
No, don't go back to that. Just keep telling me what you keep going from. I'm just saying. I mean, I'm just trying to ask you. I'm not arguing with you. What is the relief you want from this panel? Based on the way the case is postured, that's all I'm asking.
Well, we're asking the court to affirm the prior decision, but also clarify whether or not the result in the post-deprivation hearing, the result that we win and that the discipline or adverse action is a nullity, do we have to relitigate what occurred at the civil service hearing? In other words, do we have to prove defamation? Do we? Because it seems to me that the lower court, made a decision that we didn't have to actually relitigate everything. Because, you know, as far as I'm concerned, the statement was made, and the allegations are in the complaint, that, you know, Ms. Southwick mentioned Stigma Plus earlier. But, you know, if we need to go relitigate the case and start all over to say that the statements, when it was sent out to the district attorney, were defamatory, then we'd like to get some sort of instructions. But as far as I'm concerned right now, the question, I would also ask the court to give some sort of weight to the post-deprivation hearing, the fact that we had a hearing which we won, but yet we're still harmed.
All right.
Thank you.
Have your argument, thank you. Back to you, Ms. Harris.
Just a couple of points, and I'll give you some of your time back, I hope. I think that there's a lot to unpack there, and that sort of highlights the issue, which is that he went through this civil service hearing, and he got a nullity. He got would be reinstated to his job, chose not to do it, chose to take a resignation, but he didn't get, that's the due process, he didn't get what he wanted. He needs to do something, I suppose, with the district attorney's office, and he's not done anything, as far as I know, with the district attorney's office. He hasn't requested that his name be removed. We don't even know if his name's on a list. But again, I think, as you all pointed out, is that there's no publication here. There is legislation, as we pointed out in our briefing, in some states, that have, for example, California and New Jersey, that have said police officer, police departments and other law enforcement officials can't make decisions based on whether or not someone's on the Giglio list, or that prosecutors have to do certain things before putting someone on the Giglio list. But the focus is certainly not on don't send that information to the DA.
Well, of course, this lawsuit, it seems to me, is about the plaintiff saying the police chief, vindictive, may not be the right word, but improperly made these conclusions about his client and made the determination and off it goes. And so the real misconduct was by the police chief, if I understand it, under the allegations, to carry this out and to discipline him, to demote him, and to send the list. So he wants to challenge that. He's not going to try to fix in this lawsuit getting off the Giglio list, but he's trying to get damages from the city, from this municipal decision maker, the police chief, who is the highest ranking person in law enforcement in the city, and so would have policy making. So in that way, it's a 1983 suit against the city for Monell liability for what the police chief improperly did to him.
Right.
But I must say, it's not the usual kind of such suit, but nonetheless, he's trying to fit it into that mold.
Right, he's trying to fit it into that mold, and he can't do that. His remedy was in the civil service hearing and to get reinstated to the police department. He chose not to do that. That's certainly his right to do. He could have challenged all the any disciplinary decisions with the civil service board. He chose not to do that. But, you know, just because there's not a remedy in this circumstance for what he wants doesn't mean that we have to create one. And that was the fault of, you know, the district court citing Baumgartner, which really only stood for the problem. I mean, it's not a Giglio case. It has nothing to do with due process, liberty interest, due process. It's really just along the lines of, you know, if you don't have a cause of action, should you have one? And there are lots of things that there aren't causes of action for if you don't meet the elements. Title VII, you know, it's if you don't have a comparator of a similarly situated person treated differently in like circumstances, you're not going to have a cause of action. That doesn't mean the court should create the cause of action. And that's the problem here that Mr. Venegas is asking, is to create something that doesn't exist. But it's clear, and I love the Cunningham case that was cited in our brief. The question was whether or not the plaintiff can state a stigma plus claim, and that he has to prove, among other things, he was discharged. Mr. Adams wasn't discharged. Stigmatizing charges were made against him in connection with his discharge, and those charges were made public. That didn't happen. And he requested but was denied a hearing to clear his name. But Adams doesn't allege any of these things. He doesn't allege and cannot allege he was discharged. He voluntarily retired. He does not and cannot allege the police department made the inclusion on the Giglio list, if he's even on it, public. That never happened. And he does not and cannot allege he requested and was denied a name-clearing hearing. And so those are all of the reasons why under the Cunningham case and all the Fifth Circuit cases on Stigma Plus mean that he doesn't have a cause of action here. And thank you for your time today.
All right. Thank you, counsel. And thank you, counsel, both for the briefing in the case. An interesting case, to put it mildly, but we'll do our best with it. This concludes the orally argued cases for this panel. We will stand in recess until 9 a.m. in the morning.